Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon. And tonight we have a special guest, Frater Issa, who is now very honored Frater Suon of Ubar, and we will discuss the mythical labors of Hercules in relation to the Hermetic tradition. And we'll develop the background of the myth evolving from Babylon's Gilgamesh through Melkart of Phoenician Tyre into the ancient Greek hero myth so often seen in films and television. We will look at the works of Manly Hall, Albert Pike, Robert Graves, Alice Bailey, and especially the French author Charles Francois Dupuy, 1742-1809, who seems to be the only scholar who has sequenced the 12 labors in proper zodiacal order. Now, the labors of Hercules are a chart of the soul's journey through a cycle of lifetimes. They represent the great wheel of birth and death and are considered one of the keys to the mysteries. So, if you want to follow the big guy with the lion skin in the club, then tune in with us and we'll go adventuring. Frater Suon, are you with us?
I sure am, Maestro.
Oh, good. Then let me go ahead and read the introduction. Stay with us and we'll get on into it. Now, as most of you will recall, last week we spent most of our broadcast exploring the mythical adventures of the Sumerian-Babylonian solar hero Gilgamesh, who was generally considered to be the original inspiration for the Western Hercules solar myth cycle. Now, we suggested that Gilgamesh might have inspired the Phoenician Melkart and his own solar journey around the Circle of Beasts, said to have been depicted in the famous temple at Tyre, which in turn became the model for the Temple of Solomon, which recalls the symbolism of the brazen sea supported by the beasts, and the legend of the flawed casting of the brazen sea. Also, on Hiram Abiff, at various gates of the temple, which represent various positions on the zodiac. As the solar hero immigrates from culture to culture, the nature and purpose of his deeds in each of the signs of the zodiac seems to change or evolve in cultural terms. And finally, by the time we get to Hercules, several poets and bards have had their turns at rewriting the epic. We have a problem matching the signs with their deeds. There are at least three different arrangements of the labors to the sign sequences that have come down to us from antiquity, attributed to these ancient poets. Lysander, Nonnun, and others. Only one arrangement can be correct, and it must follow a key conception. And that conception derives from Prophyry, the Phoenician's Cave of the Nymphs, and is set forth in Macrobius. It is the concept of the two celestial gates Capricorn is the gate of the gods, and Cancer is the gate of men. Now, before we go any further, let's delineate that now. Cancer and Capricorn are both on the axis of the sign of the cardinal, the cross of the cardinal signs, crosses through the zodiac. So Capricorn and Cancer are both gates. And one of the things I want to point out here is I got a call 9 o'clock this morning from one of our members, Mark Milwaukee, and he was quite interested in this, and he wanted to know what significant stars there were in Cancer. So I went charging upstairs and grabbed Hinckley Allen's star lore. Star names, their lore and meaning. And because I couldn't remember any significant stars in Cancer. And sure enough, there are no significant stars in Cancer. In fact, Hinckley Allen, who we all refer to as the authority on such things, he says that Cancer is kind of insignificant. Of course, it's my constellation, doggone it, so I don't like being insignificant. But there are no really significant stars in it, and this is one of the reasons, by the way, and Mark, I know Mark's listening, so I'm answering his question. So this is one of the reasons why they call Cancer the gate, because it's sort of a hole in the sky. And then right after Cancer comes Leo, which is the first of the beginning of the labors is Leo, is the lion of Nemea, and we have this big significant star Regulus, which we're all familiar with, it's one of the marker stars of the zodiac, and this comes right after this hole in the sky, which is the gate of men, traditionally, and which is Cancer, So anyway, I thought I'd kind of elaborate on that a little bit. So this concept of the two celestial gates, Capricorn is the gate of the gods and Cancer is the gate of men, both cardinal signs on that axis. Souls come down through Cancer to be born in Leo, and they go out through Capricorn to become gods. Now, of course, also or to meet the gods, and also that this axis. In the case of the Hercules sequence, he begins in Leo, and he ends in Cancer. So in this case, we're making the Capricorn and the Cancer gates both serve the same purpose on this axis. Now, therefore, the whole cycle must begin with Leo and end in Cancer. Both the gates are on the axis of the cardinal signs, as I said. And in the correct arrangement, Hercules' final labor, which returning to the Cancer gate, is pulling Cerberus, the guardian dog of hell, up out of the underworld. Thus, as we have said over and over again, thus he transforms the underworld into the overworld. Let's go back over that a little bit. In most ancient times, in fact, back way back in Neolithic and Paleolithic times, before we even started writing, we had this idea that the stars and the sun and the planets and all of the heavens, everything we see in the night sky, spent the daytime, our daytime, in the underworld and down below. And the reason why we thought that was pretty logical, because we knew the Earth was flat. Of course, we're looking out at the horizon, and then when the sun goes down, up they come out of the horizon. They come rising up, the sun, the moon, and all the stars. And in fact, the planets. And we mentioned before that and back in those days, we were all convinced, those of us, that those of us who reason things out like that, we were all convinced that the planets were evil because they moved in retrograde and they called them disturbers of heaven, evil ones born in the bowels of the hills, and they were referred to as the Maskeem. So the planets didn't really become good guys, or some of them are still bad guys, but they didn't become good guys until after we realized that that they were in the heavens and that they didn't spend all day down in hell. So much of the symbolism that we have of the afterlife in Sumerian, Babylonian, and even carried over into Hebrew and the biblical, and to some degree with the Egyptians. So much of this afterlife symbolism was in the underground, what eventually became Tartarus and hell in the Christian tradition. Now, when Hercules, one of his labors, the last of his labors, was to pull the guard dog of hell, Cerberus, to pull the dog out of the underground, out into the light. Well, and by doing this, in the course of doing this, what he really did was kind of, it's sort of like the old joke about the grizzly bear. How do you handle a grizzly bear? If you're a martial artist, you thrust your finger all the way down his gullet when he tries to engulf you, and hook your finger outside his rear end, and then you jerk back like you do when you're doing a kata. You yank back and turn him inside out, and of course, if he's a grizzly bear, he'll tickle himself to death on the inside. So this is virtually what Hercules did with Cerberus. He pulled, by pulling the guard dog of hell out from under the underworld, he transformed the underworld into the overworld. And then instead of going down the river Styx, we climb, the souls climb the Milky Way. It was a beautiful transformation, and very apropos for that last incarnation. Now, I've consulted many works trying to find the proper sequence of these labors, including Alice Bailey's Labors of Hercules and Robert Graves' The Greek Myths. And although they were useful, the only work I have found to set forth the true order of Hercules' progress through the signs was Charles Francois Dupuy's Origin of All Religions. It was first published in English in 1872, along with astronomical corollaries that confirm all of his assignments. Now, that's Dupuy's accomplishment. Now, I'm not sure with Dupuy. He's crediting the Greco-Egyptian. He credits the Greco-Egyptian poet Nonnes as the writer of the Herculeid. The Iliad and the Herculeid is the poem about Hercules. He credits this Greco-Egyptian poet, but I'm not sure how much rearranging Dupuy has done. Regardless of how much rearranging he's done, in other words, moved the different labors to different signs, but it appears from the way he's laid it out, and we're going to go through the whole thing. It appears that he's got the proper layout, and we're certainly going to use it. And although Alice Bailey was aware of the key of the Capricorn and Cancer gates, she still insisted on starting with Aries and ending with Pisces. And also, we might note that she does not hold that the Hercules cycle applies to a universal sequence of human lifetimes or incarnations, but only to Hercules as a solar hero savior such as Jesus the Nazarene, who was reconfigured by Neoplatonic church philosophers into a solar hero. And those of you who haven't read Jesus Christ, Son, S-U-N of God, you ought to read it, because Christmas and winter solstice and all, you know, they turn Christ into Sol Invictus and who was another version of Mithra, another version of Hercules, this is what Bailey Alice Bailey, you know, was a New Ager and a follower of Blavatsky and all that. But she's more Christian, more deferential to the Christians than Blavatsky was. But so she sees, she doesn't see Hercules as representing all of us, on the wheel, but just the Savior. And this is all right, but that the actual pattern, I believe, and I think Hermetic philosophy goes along with this, that the actual pattern, the Hercules pattern, through the zodiac, it applies to all of us. All of us who have the mind, not everybody, but those who have the mind. Yeah, we're the ones that go around and do the labors. All right. Now, Robert Graves, who I dearly love, is valuable in that his treatment of the labors is encyclopedic, even if his sequence is wrong. Now, Graves, everything you want to know about these labors, and there's a lot, one of the good things about Graves, and everybody that studies the labors of Hercules should go through Graves' mythology, go through the labors, even though I believe his sequence is wrong. But he gathers all of the legends surrounding the labor and throws in everything in, because Graves is like a scavenger beetle. He's out there in mythology and the ruins of the Library of Alexandria, gobbling up everything he can find. So if you really want to know everything about it, everything about the labors and all of the different mythological aspects, especially all the Amazons and Virgo, all the different histories of the Amazons from Diodorus, Siculus, and Plato, and everybody. Okay, now, at least he's right that they begin with a lion. Hercules, Graves are right about that, and they end with a dog. So he's right about that. They begin with a lion, they end with a dog, which brings us to a point of philosophical argument. Now, if Hercules' labors represent the challenges of the individual lifetimes of those born in various sun signs, aren't they rather patriarchal? Should we remember that men do and women are, at least before the feminist movement? So, we must ask ourselves, do women incarnate on a different wheel? Perhaps the lunar zodiac through the mansions of the moon, or perhaps we all alternate different genders in succeeding incarnations. Has anyone thought about transgender astrology? Do we need a social justice movement for the occult and astrology? We could call it Strange Lives Matter. Personally, I think Hercules' labors can be interpreted as a challenge to be met by both traditional genders, and that they should be mapped that way. As we have said before, we don't know, if you don't know where you're going, then you, if you don't, if you want to know, well, really, if you want to know where you're going, then you better know where you've been. And the old Hercules has left us a wonderful star map. Now, Fredder soon. By the way, how do you correct me on the pronunciation of Soon? How do you pronounce it?
Soon's works fine. Soon's how I say it, so it's what is.
Yeah, good. I was discussing some of this with Zandria before the show, and she and I both agree that that you know, we've had previous incarnations of you know, different gender, and you know, I don't think that, you know, that the way we look at the soul, especially the Valentinian Christian concept of the soul, is not complete unless it has both male and female aspects, and then of course you can have, you know, I think that the challenges depicted in Hercules' labors could be could certainly apply to you know, to those of us who happen to be in the female gender this time around, and those who happen to be in the male gender this time around, and the plot will, you know, will last on that. So I don't think we need a series of incarnations through the mansions of the moon for the ladies, and I don't know, they might want to do that. You know, I think I know of some Dianics who might grab on that idea and work that out. You know, what are your thoughts on that? Brother Sloan?
Well, there's a couple of things going on. One, the zodiacs do have. The zodiacs are themselves male and female alternating. So with each sign being a male or a female sign, it kind of goes to it, that fits with the maybe every other incarnation. I'm not sure. But I know that with a lot of the astrological schools, the more recent ones based on Roy Viard, my pronunciation's horrible there, they use the lunar nodes to determine past life and future life. So that way you could kind of plot it on the nodes if you wanted to follow that school.
Yeah, that's right on the nodes. Yeah. Well, I've heard about that before, but I think that personally, you know, the labors of Hercules. Around the 12, the sequence is such so obviously you know, the sequence of the wheel of the lives, and you mentioned that in Alice Bailey, going through Alice Bailey, that of course she was also possibly equating Buddha going. An Eastern concept of Buddha, which would be in keeping with her alleged Tibetan master. So, did Buddha supposedly go through something similar to the labors of Hercules?
Wow. Okay. So Buddha had a lot of stuff. I've never really matched, like taken the episodes from like the Theravada, the Pali Canon, or anything like that, and checked it out astrologically. My main concern with Bailey was she was paraphrasing Buddhist stories when she was writing her Hercules thing. Like she would straight up just kind of like take a popular Buddhist story and take a Hercules myth and kind of smush them together. And that's mostly visible when Hercules is approaching his mentor and he's like, oh, before I start, you must know that I've killed all my previous masters. And he tells him, good, you'll have to slay them again before you're through. And
Well, you know, as I said when we first got into the study, Bailey is essentially what you call a New Ager, and very much under the influence of Blavatsky, and it seems like she and a number of these folks followed along with Blavatsky and believed that their teachers, their astral teachers, in other words, their uh, the the ascended masters who were whispering in their mental ears were actually were supposedly Tibetan. Well, we all know, of course, now that Kutumi and Murya Blavatsky's Tibetans were not Tibetan at all. They were Sikh Sant and Reform Hindu, however, this started this business of Tibetan masters. It was almost like back when the spiritualism got started in this country, they had American Indian spirit guides. A lot of these mediums did, and then after Blavatsky, and especially after Ranbar Singh told her for security reasons that he had to be referred to as a Tibetan. And after that, everybody, they were these Tibetans that were revealing all this stuff. Well, you know, Tibetans have their own very, very unique astrology, and it has no relationship to Western astrology, especially not to Greek mythology. And so the whole Bailey thing, was kind of flawed to start with from that standpoint. But there is interesting, and I've gone through it now, and there is interesting material in it. I'm not going to completely, downcast it, but there's interesting material there. However, I think you'll get a lot more interesting material out of Robert Graves by reading the myths and all the ramifications of the myths. And by the way, did you have a chance? I know I gave you kind of short notice on it, but did you have a chance to look at any of Dupuy's material?
I skimmed it. I wasn't able to go deep into it, so I'll let you do most of the talking about him. I do want to point out a couple of quick astrological things just for setting up some context. One of the cool things that I observed is I ran across Ruck and Staples' work on Hercules, and one of the things that they assert is that the 12 labor sits were located in the culminating in the they were local, and they culminated in the rededication of Olympia, and then sits were of the other sits were in strongholds of the goddess and entrances to the netherworld. And what's kind of interesting there is it sets up the sets. So it sets up how you have the top half of a chart is what's in the sky, and the bottom half is what's beneath the earth. And typically the bottom side is where more private things happen, and the top side is more public things, which is why, like, the fourth house is your home. It's the most private place, and the tenth house is your career. Well, the Greeks called the third house the house of the goddess, and part of that's because the moon found its joy there, but the third house would be in that bottom part, and then the second house was the gate to the underworld. So those are kind of interesting things to keep in mind.
Let me ask you this before. The house system, the whole house system, when did the astrological house system actually come into being? As I recall, it was kind of medieval. It was medieval period, wasn't it, or the end of the late medieval period when the houses started to get considered. Is that true, or is it earlier than that?
It's earlier than that. The houses we have, so in all the Hellenistic works, we have the houses, and the houses are actually credited to Hermes. It's him and Panosiris and Nechepsa.
Did they predate Ptolemy?
Oh, yes. The houses predate Ptolemy.
Then this definitely has an aspect, and of course the house system is the key, as we've found out, the key to the chemical winning of Christian Rosenkreuz. Anyway, what I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and and read this this section in Dupuy about Hercules, and go through it, and that way we can we can see where he is picking up the elements that we have been discussing, especially Melkart and the Phoenicians and the other the various mythological symbolisms that we've been discussing tonight and last week. Okay, so this is the section on the legend of Hercules from Origin of All Religions. The following comparison of the legend of Hercules with the constellations which preside over the 12 months is from Dupuy. Now, whatever may have been the opinions about Hercules, he was surely not a petty Grecian prince renowned for his romantic adventures. It is the mighty luminary which animates and fructites the universe, the divinity which has been honored everywhere by the erection of temples and altars and consecrated in religious songs by all nations, from Meroe in Ethiopia and Thebes in Upper Egypt to the British Isles and to the snows of Scythia, from the ancient Taprobani and Palibothra in the Indies to Cadiz and the shores of the Atlantic Ocean, from the forests of Germany to the burning sands of Libya. Wherever the blessings of the sun were experienced, there the worship of Hercules is found established. There are sung the glorious deeds of this invincible god. Many centuries before the epic which is assigned to the son of Alcmena, that's, you know, the nymph of Zeus that Zeus cheated on Hera with, or to the supposed hero of Corinthia, as the time when they made him live, Egypt, Phoenicia, which surely did not borrow their gods from Greece, had erected temples to the sun under the name of Hercules, and had carried his worship to the island of Thasos and to Cadiz. We're talking, of course, about Atlantis now, where they had consecrated a temple to the year and to the month, which divided it into 12 parts. Or, in other words, to the 12 labors or 12 victories which conducted Hercules to immortality. It is under the name of Hercules Astrochiton, or to the god clad in the mantle of stars, that the poet Nonuns, N-O-N-U-S, designates the sun god worshipped by the Tyrians, and that's Tyre, that's the Phoenicians, that's Melkart. The titles of the King of Fire, or Lord of the World, and of the planets, and nourisher of mankind, of the God whose glowing orb revolves eternally around the earth, and who, while followed in his track by the year, the daughter of time, and the mother of the 12 months, draws along in regular succession the seasons, which renew and reproduce themselves, are so many traits of the sun that we should recognize them, even if the poet had not given to his Hercules the name of Helios, or the sun. The author of the hymns, which are attributed to Orpheus, describes in the most precise manner the affinity, or rather the identity, of Hercules with the sun. The Phoenicians have consequently preserved the traditions that Hercules was the sun god, and that his 12 labors represented the journey of this luminary through the 12 signs of the zodiac. Porphyry, born in Phoenicia, makes the same assertion. The Egyptians, says Plutarch, thought that Hercules had his seat in the sun, and that he traveled with it around the world. The scholars of Hesiod tells us also that the zodiac in which the sun accomplishes
annual course is the real career which Hercules travels over in the fable of the 12 labors, and that by his marriage to Hebe, the goddess of youth, we must understand the year which renews itself at the end of each revolution. It is evident that if Hercules is the sun, as is shown by the above-cited authorities, the fable of the 12 labors is a solar fable which can have reference only to the 12 months and to the 12 signs, of which the sun travels over one in each month. And this inference shall become a demonstration by the comparison which we shall make of each of the labors with each one of the months, or with the signs and the constellations which mark the division of time in the heavens during each of the months. Amongst the different epochs at which formerly the year began, that of the summer solstice was one of the most remarkable. It was on the return of the sun to this point that the Greeks fixed the celebration of their Olympic feasts, the establishment of which was attributed to Hercules. This was the origin of the most ancient era of the Greeks. We shall therefore fix the departure of the sun, Hercules, the departure of the sun, Hercules, there in its annual route. The sign of the lion, domicile of that star which furnishes it with its attributes, following formerly occupied that point. His first, Leo, of course, his first labor shall be his victory over the lion, and that's Star Regulus, of course. And it is indeed the one which has been placed at the head of all the others. But before we shall compare month for month the series of the 12 labors with that of the stars, which determine and mark the annual route of the sun, it is well to observe that the ancients, in order to regulate their sacred and rural calendars, employed not only the signs of the zodiac, but more frequently also remarkable stars placed outside of the zodiac and the various constellations which by their rising and setting indicate the place of the sun in each sign. The proof of this will be found in the Festes of Ovid, in Columella, and chiefly in the ancient calendars which we have published as a sequel to our larger work. Now, before I read the breakdown, would you like to make any comments on what I just, on what we just went through?
No, I'm eager to get to the breakdown.
Okay, let's go into the breakdown. Now, the way Dupuis does this, he does it very, very well. He does the calendar on, he splits into two columns. And he has the calendar on the left side, and he has the poem, you know, the poem of the labors on the right side. So the month and the labor are side by side. And by the way, let me say this. I think Albert Pike, seeing as how this was published in English in 1872, what I just read and what we're going to read, I think Pike should have lifted this whole damn thing and put it in the 28th degree. I really think he should have. And maybe we'll just do that, you know, because I think Pike really should have done that. Pike had some nice things to say about Hercules too, anyway. But okay, let's start off. Calendar on the calendar side. First month, the passage of the sun under the sign of the celestial lion called the Lion of Nemea, fixed by the setting in the morning of the Angelicus, or the constellation of the celestial Hercules. Now, poem side. Title of the first canto of the first labor, the victory of Hercules over the Nemean lion. And that's where he gets his lion skin, by the way. All right, the second month. The sun enters the sign of the Virgin, marked by the total setting of the celestial hydra called the Nerean Hydra, the head of which rises again in the morning with Cancer. And the second labor, on the right side, Hercules slays the Lunarian Hydra, the heads of which grew again whilst he is cramped in his labor by a crawfish or Cancer. Now, he stepped on the crab. Ouch! He stepped on the crab and squashed it. And Hera, who had sent the crab, was to make up for Hercules, who Hera hated, of course, because Zeus had cheated on her to have Hercules by the nymph. And so to make it up for the crab, she made a constellation out of it. Now, I think that's a little after the fact, actually, but after the myth or whatever. But it's kind of subsequent, but it's an interesting story. Anyway, third month over on the left side. Passage of the sun at the commencement of autumn to the sign of the balance, Libra, fixed by the rising of the celestial centaur. The same whose hospitality Hercules enjoyed, this constellation is represented in the heavens with the leather bottle filled with wine and adorned with the vine, with the leaves and grapes and the image of the season's product. Then rises in the evening the celestial bear, called by the others the boar, and the annual of the earth, and the animal of Romanthia. Now, on the poem side, a centaur gives hospitality to Hercules. His fight with the centaurs for a cask of wine, and the victory of Hercules over them, and he slays the terrible wild boar, which devastated the fields of Romanthia. Now, this is Libra. And you want to know, you might want to know, what's the balance? What's the symbol here? Well, the balance is very simply this. Hercules did not really, he didn't slay the boar. He actually trapped the boar and tied the boar's front legs together. He tied the boar's back legs together, left his front legs loose, and then picked him up like a wheelbarrow and walked him down the hill. And that was the balance, was his holding up the boar by his hind legs. And this is kind of like kids in a sack race, by the way, I got that, and that you can pick up this extra stuff from Robert Graves, because Robert Graves, he throws everything in. Okay, the fourth month. The sun enters the sign of the scorpion, fixed by the setting of Cassiopeia, a constellation which was formerly represented by a hind. Now, I said the hind is a deer. The fourth labor. Triumph of Hercules over a hind with golden horns and feet of brass, which Hercules took on the seashore where it was reposing. So that, and by the way, the golden hind became, Sir Francis Drake's, the name of Sir Francis Drake, the Elizabethan pirate, Elizabeth's Elizabethan pirate. Francis Drake had named his ship the Golden Hind. Now, fifth month. The sun enters the sign of Sagittarius, consecrated to the goddess Diana, whose temple was at Stymphalia, in which the Stymphalian birds were to be seen. This passage is fixed by the rising of the three birds, the vulture, the swan, and the eagle, pierced by the arrow of Hercules. And the fifth labor is Hercules gives chase near Stymphalia to the birds of the Stymphalian Lake, which are represented in number 3 in the medals of Parthenius. Actually, he dispersed the Stymphalian birds, and so that one fits the symbolism. Okay, the 6th month. Passage of the sun into the sign of the goat or Capricorn, the son of Neptune. According to some, the grandson of the sun. According to others, the passage is marked by the setting of the river of the Aquarius, which flows under the stable of the Capricorn, and the source of which is in the hands of Aristeus, the son of the river Peneus. Now this is very significant and important. The 6th labor. Hercules cleans the stables of Aguirreus, the son of the sun, or according to others, the son of Neptune, which makes the river Peneus run through it. Now, remember now, this is Capricorn, is the gate of the gods. Okay, so what's so important about Hercules cleaning all this dung out of the stable? Well, this dung accumulated in this stable for 30 years, the 30 years worth of cow poop in this stable. Now, 30 years is about as old as Hercules was when he did this, okay? So what does Hercules do? He gets the river. He runs a river through the stable, and of course, what's his name? Aguirreus, the owner of the stable, said he tricked him by running the river through. Well, no, he didn't. Hercules ran this river through the stable to clean out 30 years of poop. In other words, it's the gate of the gods. This is the gate of the gods. This is purification. Hercules just gave himself a colon irrigation, basically cleaned himself out, and so he could go through the gate of the gods. And this is a purification. This is obvious. Okay, so these, now by the way, by this time we should be realizing that Hercules' labors, his main opponent in these labors is himself, just like the stables and the stables. That's 30 years of sludge in his colon that he's cleaning out. Spiritual colon, too. Okay, the 7th month. The sun enters the sign of the waterman or Aquarius, and at the place in the heavens where the full moon was found every year, which served to denote the epic for the celebration of the Olympic Games, this passage was marked by the vulture placed in the heavens alongside the constellation called Prometheus. And at the same time that the ancient bull called the bull of Priaphane and of Marathon culminated in a meridian, the setting of the house of Arion or Pegasus. Now, the 7th labor. Hercules arrives at Elis. He was mounted on the horse of Arion. He drags along with him the bull of Crete, beloved by Pasiphae, which afterwards ravaged the plains of Marathon. He institutes the celebration of the Olympic Games, where he is the first to enter the lists, and he kills the vulture of Prometheus. Now, who was Prometheus? Well, Prometheus was another Hercules figure. Prometheus was, as you recall, he gave fire to mankind, and Zeus punished him for that by chaining him to a rock and having a vulture eat his liver every day. Hercules comes along and says, "Oh, come on, Prometheus! I'm not going to. This is terrible." So Hercules kills the vulture. Now, if you read Robert Graves, you'll find out that also Zeus, as a result of kind of repenting, Zeus makes a ring out of Prometheus's chains. Tolkien fans will get a kick out of this. So Zeus feels bad about that, about having, you know, done this. And after Hercules kills the vulture, Zeus comes down. He says, "Well, I'm going to leave him. We're not going to let him off the hook completely. We're going to make a ring out of this iron chain of his, and he has to wear this ring, for the rest of eternity." So here's the ring of Prometheus, made out of iron by Zeus. And that's one that you should check. So, you know, really, when studying all of this, even though Graves is wrong in his order, and Dupuis is right, and Graves is wrong, Graves has so much extra material in here that needs to be studied. The eighth month, passage of the sun to the sign of the fishes, fixed by the rising of the morning of the celestial horse, the head of which is bearing on Aristeus, or on the Aquarius, the son of Cyrene. And the eighth labor, Hercules makes the conquest of the horses of Diomedes, the son of Cyrene. Now, these two mares, ate human flesh. Imagine that. There's these female horses. They ate human flesh, and Hercules fed them, and I kind of suspect that he fed them on that wild boar. But whatever it is, he was supposed to catch them and break them, you know, like a cowboy. But so he fed them, and he got them calmed down, and managed to capture them that way. Now, the fifth month, the sun enters the sign of the ram, consecrated to Mars, and which is called the Ram of the Golden Fleece. And this passage is marked by the rising of the ship Argo, and and the setting of Andromeda, or the celestial woman, and of her girdle, by that of the whale, by the rising of Medusa, and the setting of Queen Cassiopeia. Now, the ninth labor, Hercules embarks on board the ship Argo in order to make the conquest of the ram of the Golden Fleece. He fights with a martial weapon. You know, as you were, he fights with martial women, the daughters of Mars, the Amazons, whom he takes a magnificent girdle and liberates a maiden exposed to a whale or a sea monster like the one which Andromeda and the daughter of Cassiopeia was exposed. And this, of course, is the famous girdle of Hippolytia, the queen of the Amazons, and which I think ended up on Wonder Woman, but so many of our superheroes, at least back in the golden age of comic books, where we had Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman, were all derived from Greek mythology, too bad that is. Well, we still have Wonder Woman. Captain Marvel, of course, got a really bad deal. He got sued by Superman, and unfortunately, Superman won. But anyway, the tenth month, the sun leaves the ram. Before we leave the Golden Fleece, let me say this: Hercules was one of the Argonauts, and Robert Graves has written a terrific novel full of wonderful mythology called it was originally called Hercules, My Shipmate, but they changed the title to The Golden Fleece, so I think it's now called The Golden Fleece. One thing I want to point out about however, about The Golden Fleece, and we have mentioned this when we dealt with The Chemical Wedding, The Golden Fleece was actually a real thing that was used in the Black Sea area. It was used to collect gold. They used it the same way our 49ers used to pan, you know, to pan gold. They would use the fleece, hang these fleeces on the rapids coming down out of the springs of the hills, and the fleece would collect the gold dust. And then the water would run over, you know, from coming out of the mountain, the water would run over the rocks and over the fleece, and the gold dust would collect on the fur of the fleece. And so after a while, you know, if you left your fleece out there long enough, it would be sparkling with gold, and so the Golden Fleece would be quite nice. But that was the original Golden Fleece. Okay, so the 10th month. Sun leaves the ram of Phrixus and enters the sign of the bull. This transit is marked by the setting of Orion, who was in love with the Atlantides, or Pleiades, and by that of Boots, the driver of the oxen of Icarus, and by that of the river Eridanus, and by the rising of the Atlantides, and by that of the goat of the wife of Faunus. And the 10th labor, Hercules, after his voyage with the Argonauts, in order to conquer the ram, returns to Hesperia, the conquest of the oxen of Geryon. And he also kills a tyrannical prince who persecuted the Atlantides, and arrives in Italy at the house of the Faunus at the rising of the Pleiades. The 11th month, the sun enters the sign of the twins, Gemini, which transit is indicated by the setting of the dog Procyon. By the cosmical rising of the great dog, followed by the stretching out of the Hydra, and by the rising of the evening of the celestial swan. And the 11th labor, Hercules conquers a terrible dog, that's Cerberus, the tail of which was a serpent, and the head of which was bristling with serpents, and he defeats also Cygnus, or the prince swan, at the time in which the dog star scorches the earth with its fire. And the 12th month, the last month, the sun enters the sign of Cancer, which corresponds with the last month, indicated by the setting of the streams of the waterman and the centaur, and by the rising of the shepherd and his sheep, and at the time when the constellation of the Hercules in Genutus is descending towards the occidental regions called Hesperia. That's the house of the Hesperides, followed by the polar dragon, the guardian of the apples, growing in the garden of Hesperides, which the dragon puts under his feet, as marked in the sphere in which falls near him toward the setting. And the 12th labor, Hercules travels in Hesperia in order to gather the golden apples guarded by a dragon, which in our spheres is near the pole, according to others, to carry out the sheep with the golden fleece. And he is preparing to make a sacrifice, and he puts on a robe dyed in the blood of the centaur whom he had slain at the passage of the river. And by this robe he is consumed before he dies, and ends with his mortal career in order to resume his youth in heaven and to enjoy their immortality. Now, there's a lot more to this 12th labor than what Dupuy has here. As a matter of fact, he in capturing the golden apples, Hercules gets up, Atlas to, Atlas is the guardian of the Hesperides, and Atlas has the whole cosmic sphere on his shoulders, and Hercules says, look, he says, if I'll hold the sphere for you for a while, I'll hold the sphere. You need to go pick me some of the apples. And Atlas, oh boy, if I could just have a few, just a little while without holding this celestial globe up. So Atlas agrees and gives Hercules the whole sphere to hold up. So Hercules is holding it up. Atlas goes and picks a couple of the apples. Now these apples are the fruit of immortality. You know, these are the apples of the Garden of Eden. These are the apples of immortality. And this is like Gilgamesh's, you know, diving down, doing his pearl diving thing, going down to get the plant. You know, this is so anyway. So Atlas goes and gets the apples and comes back and says, okay, Hercules, I picked the apples and Hercules says to Atlas, he says, well, you know, he says, look, he says, I'll hold the cosmos up for you, but I need to get a pad. It's so heavy. I need to get a pad on the back of my head. You know, and can you take it for a little bit and let me get a pad and put it on the back of my head. And Atlas, being kind of dumb, you know, he takes the globe back on the top of his head, and Hercules grabs the apples and says, "This is too bad. You got it." And off he goes. And anyway, the idea, of course, here is that in cancer he pulls the dog up, does reverse of the world. Then he gets the apples of immortality, and then he goes off and becomes immortal. So this is the as I said, the proper sequence that Dupuy has of the labors as relation to the signs. And one of the things that I notice in here is that he relates this to these risings of the other constellations. And this is what's important. It's not just what's going on in those constellations themselves, but what's going on in the rest of the heavens in relation to the, to the earth. And this is why I think Monsieur Dupuy has done a marvelous job in rectifying this whole thing. Michael, you want to give us some comments on this?
Well, I completely agree with you in that Dupuy's done a great job, and his focus on the stars is excellent and lines up with the way that the decans work and the way that the Egyptians use their own calendar. The only other thing I would add at this point, because I know that we're running close on time, so it seems appropriate to honor Saturn, is jumping back to throw in an end note for the Aegean stables, that 30 years is also Saturn's lesser or least year, according to William Lilly, which is Renaissance, but you can also jump all the way back to the Hellenistic period. And when you do certain techniques there, Saturn gets 27 or 30 years. So that also fits.
Yeah, that's great. Well, okay, yeah, we are running a little over, but it's been a fascinating subject. And I hope we have... stimulated some stuff. By the way, I'm sure Mark in Milwaukee is listening. And Mark, you got to get a copy of Hinckley Allen. As I said, that Hinckley Allen star. And you know, I'm going to also put in a plug for my friend Dr. Ed Krupp at Griffith Park. He has a wonderful book called Beyond the Blue Horizon, which is a wrap of not just Hercules, but all of the celestial legends and myths. And Ed Krupp he's a scientist and in something of a skeptic, but he loves mythology. He loves celestial mythology. And so Beyond the Blue Horizon is another good one to get. And let's also not forget Hamlet's Mill by Chapin and Van Decken, and that's another one that you buffs that those of you who are interested in this sort of stuff should certainly look into. Okay, that does it for tonight. This has been a really good show. Thank you so much, very honored Frater Suan, and we'll be seeing you soon. And next week we'll have another show. I don't quite know what yet, but it'll be a good one anyway. So tune in with us again. And meanwhile, good magic.